Lecture 38, The Confederate Home Front, Part 1.
We've spent a good deal of time looking at military operations in the Eastern and Western theaters in the spring and early summer of 1864. With this lecture, we're going to shift to the Confederate home front. And our first series of topics on the scene behind the lines in the Confederacy will be Confederate politics, Jefferson Davis and his policies, and the troubled performance of the Confederate economy. The war brought a great deal of change to both Northern and Southern society. That goes without saying, and we've talked about many of the changes that it brought, and we'll talk more in future lectures. But it's important to remember that it brought more change to society in the Confederacy, because that is where the war was taking place. The changes were more dramatic, they were more unsettling in the Confederacy than they typically were in the North. As the Confederate people struggled to keep their armies in the field, they struggled with their economic and political structures, which began to crack and threatened to come apart as the war went on. Efforts to provide food and clothing and other necessities of life and to keep their homes safe proved very difficult and in many cases impossible for Confederates. Thousands of Southern families became refugees as federal military forces occupied increasingly large stretches of the Confederacy's territory. And we'll get to all of those aspects of life behind the lines in this lecture and our next lecture, but we'll start with Confederate politics. And we'll start by looking at how Confederates tried to set up a republic that didn't have what we would think of as a traditional party system. Many Confederates went into their new nation hoping to avoid partisan party politics. They believed that parties had been an unfortunate departure from the intention of the selfless generation of founders in this nation. They thought the founders had hoped that people would take a public-spirited view of how to move the republic forward and not get involved in selfish, self-interested matters of party. That had been the path that the United States began down, thought these founders of the Confederacy, but we had gone astray. As in many other respects, the Confederates saw themselves as the true inheritors of the Revolution in their belief that parties, on balance, were an evil that undermined the Republic rather than enhanced it. As the war progressed, there would be debates about how powerful the central government should be, whether it should have these powers or the state should have these powers. Tremendous debates over that kind of question, but there never was a serious effort in the Confederacy to set up a party system. So we will be looking at the interesting phenomenon of this democratic society operating without one of the key trappings of the larger democratic society in the United States. In the early days of the war, there was an appearance of near unanimity among Southern politicians. Although there had been a great deal of debate over secession in most of the states, as we've seen, once Sumter had been fired upon, there was a rallying to the Confederate cause. And this gave the appearance of almost total agreement on goals and policy. It was an appearance only, however, and it masked the fact that there were significant differences among different politicians in the Confederacy, and that all of the Southern states had strong histories of partisan political debate. Almost all of them had had a quite vigorous Whig party, or at least a Whig party that was able to mount some kind of an opposition to the Democratic Party in the late antebellum years. And even further back, a number of the Southern states had had vigorous Federalist parties that opposed the Jeffersonian Republicans of the early years of the Republic. Furthermore, several parts of the South remained overwhelmingly Unionist in sentiment during the secession crisis. We've talked about that too. Eastern Tennessee, Central Texas, Western Virginia, many of the mountainous upcountry regions harbored a lot of Unionist sentiment. In the first flush of war, those Unionists sort of went underground, or at least held their tongues. They didn't obviously make known their opposition to what the Confederacy was doing, but as the war unfolded, many of these Unionists became more outspoken critics of what was going on in the Confederacy. They especially became critical when the war started to go badly for the central government and the Confederacy.